This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 291 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut. David Vanderhoof is in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania, working to regain his health. We attended the Innovations in Flight Family Day and Outdoor Aviation Display held June 15th, 2019 at the Smithsonian's National Air and Space Museum, Stephen F. Uvarhazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. This is an annual event, the Saturday before Father's Day, and besides the museum exhibits, a number of commercial, military, and general aviation aircraft fly in for the day. There are also special exhibitors throughout the museum providing information and activities. The Airplane Geeks, which includes this podcast, were again invited, and we recorded a number of interviews at the event. One in particular might be of interest to UAV Digest listeners. That is a Princess Leia Pandolfi from the Kashmir World Foundation. This organization promotes wildlife education and conservation, often using drones, and we've covered them in the past. Well, the Kashmir World Foundation was one of the special exhibitors at the Museum for Innovations in Flight, and we sat down with Leia and recorded a conversation. We is myself, Micah, and Robert. The interview is included in this week's episode of the Airplane Geeks podcast, but we're going to play it here as well in case you don't listen to that podcast. If you do and have already heard Airplane Geeks episode 557, you can skip this here. Otherwise, let's get right to our conversation. Well, Leia Pandolfi is back at the Air and Space Museum with your organization, the Kashmir World Foundation. And it's good to see you again. It's been a few years since we've talked to you.
It is great to see you guys as well. And you're right, it has been several years since I've seen you guys.
And we got off to a rocky start because we stole your table. I think we might have been the first, Micah, the first group in here this morning. We were in here pretty early.
We were here before they even had anybody at the door. We just walked
in. So we strolled in and we just kind of said, well, we'll just go back to the place where they put us every year. And we set up the table, got all this equipment put up. And after we were done with that, somebody came by from the museum and said, actually, this isn't where you are this time. So,
well, that's okay. We were late, so no big deal. We got another spot.
And the thing was, they didn't tell us who. If they would have told us it was you, we would say, sorry. We can't take. We got to move back to where we're supposed to be.
You guys are too kind. We appreciate it. But no, I think it worked out.
It's fine. Yeah. It was great. So refresh our listeners and tell us a little bit about what's new with you and the organization since last time we've talked.
My God, I think a lot has been new since we last spoke, especially I think if we did this like 4 years ago, a lot has happened since then. We are now teaching our drone workshops internationally.
No kidding. So I remember that we came to a drone workshop somewhere around here in Northern Virginia.
Yeah.
And so the idea was that students would learn, several things, including how to build a drone.
That's right. So I started, my first project with drones was really the Wildlife Conservation UAV Challenge. And I got into drones because of my passion for wildlife and finding a way to study and protect different endangered species. And then quickly I learned the lack of understanding of drones. This is early, like 2014. So I developed the DaVinci Challenge Build a Drone Workshop. And we did that for a couple of years locally here. Mm. And I had to shift back to our mission for the foundation. So we started looking into other types of drones and endangered species we wanted to work with. And I believe I spoke to you about our sea turtle project the last time we were here.
Yes.
So for that sea turtle project, we have traveled to Florida to teach our Fly for Conservation workshop. We've been to Costa Rica to teach our Fly for Conservation, Mexico. And this year, we just got back from Brazil teaching there in the Cerrado, literally landlocked in the middle of Brazil. It was fantastic, amazing, protected area. Not a wildlife project, but a tree species identification project, but using drones.
Hmm. So why is the tree identification important there?
So one of the partners we have, it is WWF is our partner in Brazil. And one of the things that they're trying to do in this protected area is look into agroforestry. And what we're trying to do is help develop a program which would allow us to maybe look at a 10-year plan. We're going to use drones to create 3D maps of the different parts of this protected area that we're working within. And part of that is to look for like fire scars and areas that have been deforested and then go back in to plant some trees. I know there's some really cool companies out there that are using drones for planting trees. We haven't committed to doing that yet. Mm-hmm. But we have committed to the AI part because that's one of the key things that we focus on is developing the artificial intelligence on board the aircrafts. So what we're starting with is being able to identify three different tree species. And we've actually already have a neural network where we can identify the palm, jelly, and the baruti tree. And the locals use those trees for harvesting the fruit. So in this agroforestry, what we're looking at is being able to take a 10-year plan, break it down into, okay, for 7 years, the locals will have this area where we're going to plant, we'll grow the trees, and then we'll get to a point where they can harvest these the fruit from the trees. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have a 3-year transition period where they're going to get out of that area that we've created for them, and we'll find another area that they're going to go into, and whatever trees have grown within that will remain for the wildlife in the park.
And you said something earlier about, you know, going in there to find areas that have been deforested.
Yes.
And I would think that in Brazil, with such thick forest areas and such really dense untraced populations, that there might be areas that have been deforested illegally or whatever that you wouldn't even know about and you wouldn't be able to find without the drones.
You're absolutely right. And that's why they were really excited for a couple of things, because they can cover so much ground. And I'll tell you, I mean, I was pretty surprised. We had 40 people in that training. It was amazing.
Yeah,
but one of the things that they kept saying was the fact that, you know, having the opportunity to learn how to build their drones and be able to then customize them for the future purposes is going to help them even more, because they can use the drones for other projects that they have interest in as well. Because the protected area includes like local, I think federal and kind of like in between government authorities, because it was a hot mess. But we had groups from different government organizations that were there, and some of them were interested in tourism. We had some university professors that were interested in like mapping the caves. Oh my gosh, they had some of the most amazing, beautiful caves at this place. And they want to be able to do mapping on the outside as well as on the inside. And some of these caves are like 800 feet high, and you know, being able to map above that and have a really good idea of where it is. And then as far as like the parks themselves, they want to be able to maybe a map for the trails for the parks as well. So for search and rescue, it could be a great opportunity for them, for the tree forestry. But then our interest would always go back to an endangered species. So we're thinking about, well, you know, if we help you guys build something up, then what can we do to help the animals within this protected area as well? So we are still thinking about more ways they'll be able to use the drones besides just the one tree project.
Well, and that's something I wanted to ask you about in terms of endangered species. Recently, I think we covered a news story on the Airplane Geeks about someone that came into the country. I can't remember where he was flying in from, but had all these endangered, I think it was turtles, hidden in his pants. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the Kashmir World Foundation does is they work with animal trafficking. And can you tell us a little bit about your
sure.
work with that and how you handle that?
So we kind of work more on the counter-poaching. So one of my goals was to get to it before they kill the animals. And the reason for that is we do have a lot of different organizations that have been working on the trafficking part. Like once they confiscate the parts, what do you do? For me, it wasn't the area that I was interested in because the animals are already dead. So I wanted to work with where can I interject where I can stop the poaching sure. before it happens. But we do have a project with the sea turtles where I don't know if you guys have come down and seen our new aircraft. It's a fixed wing aircraft and it's about 13 foot wingspan. And we're using that for our sea turtle project in Malaysia. So one of the challenges they face in Malaysia is the fact that there are illegal fishing pens in the ocean and the poaching vessels will come by and they'll take the turtles at their convenience. Huh. And with our drone, what we're doing is we're going to be able to fly around these islands, look for the illegal fishing pens, and then using AI, we could scan inside to see if we could detect the turtles. And eventually, with enough data, we'll be able to identify the turtle species that we're looking at and count the number of turtles that are found in that holding pen for that we find somewhere in the ocean that's not supposed to be there.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit about the process for that data acquisition and analysis. Are the drones using optical sensors and recording video essentially?
So that's a great question. I looked at this in many ways because the hardest part is getting that data.
Yes.
And one of the things I learned early on is like, for example, with our project in South Africa, if we were trying to collect data on the poachers or the animals, we would have to go into the field and we'd be there for maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, right? Once a year, if that. But I didn't want to be stuck with that situation. I wanted a pool of data from different times, different seasons, different times of the day as well. So that's one of the reasons why the Fly for Conservation workshops are so important for us, because we leave a pool of people in the countries that we teach in. They can then continue to collect the data, share that data with us, and then we can continue to develop the AI and improve the capabilities of that AI as we get new data from them. And then we can send them a software update to say, okay, this is, you know, version 3 or version 4 or version 5. And now we've gotten to the point where we were able to say, yeah, that's a turtle, to, hey, that's a loggerhead sea turtle or that's a leatherback sea turtle. But it makes it much more efficient because I am a nonprofit and I have to also be always conscious of how much money we're going to be spending, and cost of travel can get pretty expensive. So this way we have a trained group of biologists or researchers, or if we're working on the counter-poaching end, law enforcement groups that we work with, where they can collect data, use the drones, share that data with us, and we can continue to help improve it.
And is it, we were talking before about the tree identification
yes.
application. Is it essentially the same kind
method.
Of process?
Yeah, method? So the method yeah. is usually the same. And another thing that, you know, I found works really well is our partnership with a conservation organization and a university. Because I feel like, you know, the generation where they're just growing into technology and programming or computer science, it's so important to help them understand the importance of animals. But then how do you use this technology to help these animals? So we partner up a lot. When we taught in Mexico, our partner, conservation partner was Pernatura, and they're working with our sea turtle project. And then our university partner was Merida University. And therefore, between the technical side of that university's capability, research students and professors, we can then have a technical team in Mexico that can help if we get into a a too technical issue where the conservationists can't really figure it out. And now not only are we making our data transfer much easier, but we're also making the ability to integrate and upgrade the drone sensors and components as needed, because we have a good educational team in place as well as a conservation team.
So the fixed wing drone that gets you longer flight times, greater distances, are you using a commercially available drone or modifying one or building
That's
one from scratch?
Great question. Well, this is actually going to be our very own fixed wing, and it is called the Avenger. And we have been working on it for a while now, and it's actually in partnership with a friend of ours who has been working on it for a while. And then my husband, Ron, has been working with him on the modifications, and we finally got it together last night.
Oh.
Ah, it's here. So
congratulations.
You guys have to come by and take a look at it. It's beautiful, but there's definitely a lot of modifications we want the drone to have before we can make it commercially available as well. Like for us, it's going to be used for our conservation partners, but I think it's such a great aircraft and the price point that it's going to be at, I think it could be used for a lot of different applications that right now we don't have that buffer zone of an aircraft that really works where you could just snap it in and it's fully electrical and it can do 3.5 to 4 hour time with where we are right now. And then obviously with added battery power, we can increase the endurance if need be, but then that all depends on the sensors that go in as well. So I can't say exactly too much because it is customized, but the drone would be customized for either Brazil. If we're doing the tree cover, you know, if we're covering like, I don't know, I think it's 1,800 hectares or something like that. We can use this aircraft versus multi-copter for close combat kind of situation. So that's kind of our goal, is to be able to customize aircraft for the missions that we care about. And if it's an aircraft that actually works really well, we've been asked by so many other groups that don't do wildlife stuff if we would be willing to make it available for them to be able to purchase. And then all that funding.
Kashmir World Foundation, yeah. Air Force, you know, with all the different aircraft for different missions.
Yes, exactly. There's one exciting thing that we're doing this summer, which is our Teachers Take Flight workshop has really taken off. I had to back off on the workshops that you guys came to because it was just taking a lot of time away. But our Teachers Take Flight workshop last year was in partnership with Texas A&M University in Dallas. So we taught there, and we had 24 teachers from, I think, 8 different school districts in Dallas. That was really exciting. And this year, we've actually partnered with CapTech Consulting in Reston, Virginia. So they're hosting it for us. And the reason why this is the first time I'm partnering with like a tech company is because I want the teachers to be able to have a better understanding of the future of aviation with AI. So the company we're partnered with, that's what they do. They do artificial intelligence for their clients, cloud-based learning and mobile apps and all sorts of kinds of things that you see in a class curriculum. But then it's like, well, how is it applied? So with this company, we're able to have them come in and give some guest lectures on how AI is being used in the world of business. So when students graduate, this will give the teachers an opportunity to understand a little bit more. But then we bring in the drone aspect of it. Well, now you understand AI on its own, but how is it integrated with drones for real world applications? Because I feel like if in the next five years you don't have a drone with AI capabilities, you are definitely carrying around a phone as if it's like 1990 or something, right?
Yeah. So you mentioned a lot of different applications here. How are you finding new applications and new projects? How are they coming to you? Are you just things that occur to you, or people coming to you? How are you finding those?
Some of these ideas come to me because I'm usually interested in different animals, and I also research different technologies that become accessible and affordable. Because I work with conservation, I always have to think about, is this something affordable for the conservation world? And then, yes, another way is people come to us. I think, you know, now seeing drones as more common in the conservation world, we get a lot more people contacting us to say, hey, you know, well, just last night I got an email from someone in Brazil. They're like, oh, you know, we could totally understand your drone project for the sea turtles and finding the nests on the beach with the drones, because we have 65 kilometers of beach to cover every single night. And there's just no way we have enough manpower to be able to do that. So I feel like we're getting to a point where drones are becoming more acceptable and applied to real uses as well. So we get contacts from people all over the world about that. And then if I travel and I see like a need for something, then I'm like, wow, you know, this is something I'd want to be involved with. So we do have we started in South Africa with the rhino elephant poaching crisis. We transitioned to sea turtles on the conservation end, which is with the biologists, but then also expanded with the counter poaching in Malaysia. And we have the Brazil tree species project. And then we also have a snow leopard project. So you could see like the environments that we're going to be in will vary. So that's the other reason why custom drones is really the only way for us to be able to keep moving forward, pushing on the technology, integrating AI. And, you know, we have interns from all over the world. And I feel like that's what makes us successful, is a pool of driven, motivated intellects from all over the world that want to help with wildlife protection. But at the same time, they have skills in technology that now they can apply to that as well.
Sure. And you're finding that different in jurisdictions or places that you're doing this are being cooperative from a legal standpoint and letting you use your own drones and flying at night for the sea turtles and that stuff. So that it sounds like that's going well. Is that true?
Yeah. So it's not always, it doesn't always go well. It really does honestly depend on the country and our partner in that country. Because if you are an established organization in whatever country you're working in and you have a good track record from before, if you're going to propose something new as a technical advancement for your work, I think the government will support that more than if we were just going in ourselves and saying, hey, we want to come in and we're American company coming in to do XYZ, they're going to be like, no, I don't think so. But we do have some amazing partners on the ground that do all the logistics and approvals for whether it's, you know, bringing in the drones or some transmitters. I think we needed some extra approval for Brazil, which I didn't know about. But, you know, our partner did all of how do we get the equipment into the countries. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would imagine that you can you have more flexibility to do things with drones in other countries than currently
yes.
here in the United States, because
yes.
you know we're not as far along in developing the regulations that would govern things like flying beyond visual line of sight and
yes.
night flying and things like that. So is that holding you back from some projects you might undertake in the United States, or you've just got plenty of existing projects?
I think I do have plenty of existing projects, and I feel like because we can travel and because for me it's more important that what we're testing is in the environment we're using it in, it doesn't impact us as much as if we were only working in the U.S. and we had to abide by all those rules and regulations. So I think from that perspective, because we can do our tests outside the U.S., it makes it much easier for us to not have to deal with all the little dots and the crosses on your T's for getting through with the approvals that, you know, some places it will be impossible to fly here.
All right. All right. Well, where can our listeners learn more about these projects or maybe even make a donation to the foundation?
Sure. Well, they could definitely visit www.kashmirworldfoundation.org. And that's KASHMIR, worldfoundation.org. And our Teachers Take Flight workshop is from August 5th through the 8th. So they'll learn to build, program, fly their drones, but then think about what projects the students can get involved with where it will push on bringing in computer science students integrating, like you were always talking about STEM, but it's mostly also how do you integrate all of that together? So I think with what we do, they could see like the projects we're doing and how we're pulling from so many different areas that it makes a really good research project and hands-on project learning for students, whether they're in high school or university level as well.
Great. All right. Well, again, it's great to see you. We're nearing the end of the day here, and I hope you had a lot of good action at your table.
We did. It was pretty jam-packed today. I mean, a lot of people from outside Virginia usually, but I mean, I think because what we do is so different than what they expect to see here for Innovations in Flight, they're like, please sign us up. We want to know. Or when are you going to be in our town to teach a workshop or something? Great. So it's nice. I think, you know, that also always helps in the long run. You never know who reaches out when and how. Yes. So it's been a really good day. And what about you guys? Did you guys have a lot of good interviews?
We did. And I think almost totally depleted our supply of Airplane Geeks buttons. They were a big hit apparently this year. So that's been great. But we've met some really interesting people. Present company included.
And, thank you.
it's just been a wonderful day.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So are you guys going to head back today? Or are you doing your...
We have dinner tonight.
Tonight, yep, with the team?
At the Red Robin.
Yep. Okay.
You guys are invited.
Thank
Everybody's
you.
Invited. And we hope to have a great time.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. You've got a cool team here.
Well, and let's not make it so long between visits next time.
Yeah, I agree. Let's at least not wait almost like a half decade.
Right.
Oh, boy, it sounds so long.
I know.
Yeah. Thanks
Imagine
again.
Imagine how I feel.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys so much for your time today.
You've been listening to our guest, Princess Aliyah Pandolfi from the Kashmir World Foundation. That website, again, is kashmirworldfoundation.org. Kashmir is K-A-S-H-M-I-R. And we'll have that link in the show notes for this episode. We'll also have a link to a page they have where they've published some photos from Innovations in Flight. You can take a look at that. As always, you can find us at the UAVDigest.com. Show notes for this episode are at the UAVDigest.com/291. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at UAV Digest. We also have a Slack team. Send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, and we'll send you an invite. Also, look for UAV Digest on Facebook. The best way to be sure you don't miss any episodes is to subscribe. You can find a podcasts app in iOS and Android. And there are third-party apps as well, things like Pocket Casts and Overcast, and there's many others. So again, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.